It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
7 minutes after two, it's the third and final hour of the program with me, Nael Upondo, and I'm with you until 3 o'clock. And now we do have the good Pastor Piri joining us on the line. Pastor Andrew Piri has given us some perspective on the conversations we are focusing on this week. And he is our pastor for our daily focus. Remember, we've been talking about the concept of resisting the devil, and this whole idea baffled me as a layperson. I don't know if it's possible for a natural person to be able to resist a supernatural devil. And I said, perhaps we must begin right there before we get into the other nice parts of our conversation. Pastor Peter is joining us on the line. Good afternoon to you, Pastor, and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us again.
Good afternoon, Aye, and thank you for having me on again.
Let's begin right there, Mfundis. How realistic is this command to resist the devil and he'll flee from you? How realistic is it for a natural mortal being to resist a supernatural, extraterrestrial, immortal being? Is this really realistic? Are we just being told to dream up some dream that you can, you can resist the devil? Really?
That's a good one. Colossians chapter 2, verse 15. I like the book of Colossians, by the way.
Okay.
If I could just read from chapter 1, verse 15, says he's the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Then the very next verse, by him all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him.
Right.
Verse 10 of chapter 2 says, you are complete in him who is the head of all principality and power. Then verse 15 says, having disarmed principalities and powers, he made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them in it. It is possible to resist the devil, but not in your own power.
Yeah.
You can only do it believing in what Jesus has done. I don't know if that makes sense.
Do we have anyone, Mfundisi, in living history who has been able to resist the devil, except for Jesus? Any human being who was able to resist the devil, and who is
a number of people. I can give a very quick example of Joseph. I mean, I gave you that story yesterday.
Yes.
Right? Who knows how that would have ended up? I mean, I'd have had a child by now.
Right.
But there was Joseph, encountered with this proposal. He managed to resist and run away. It was quite a lucrative looking proposal.
Let me give you an example about Joseph that that perhaps pastors don't look at, and perhaps you must look at it from our perspective as lay people.
Sure.
Joseph may have said no to Potiphar's wife, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he never said no to that beautiful African Nubian woman that he was given as a wife. And yet God said he must not intermingle with these nations. But he, when he saw that African beauty, he could not resist. He married her. Solomon did the same thing. So while Joseph may have resisted Potiphar's wife, we don't know how Potiphar's wife looked like, Mfundis. What we do know is that he married a woman he was not supposed to marry, an African woman, a Nubian queen, a Nubian beauty, an Egyptian. He was not supposed to marry that Egyptian. So I'm not quite sure if Joseph is the best person here, because when a person is beautiful, we are told Rebecca was beautiful. Sarah was beautiful. Rachel was beautiful.
Yeah,
but Potiphar's wife, it's easy to say no to certain things. That example doesn't fly for me.
I like that. So, you know, his words actually help give us an idea.
Right.
His words, when he says, I'm trying to find, this is Genesis chapter 39.
How can I do such a thing to my God?
Yes.
Yeah, I can say that too. There are people I would be able to say that to for this.
but then if it's because she's ugly, why not just tell her, you're not my type?
We don't know for this. She may not have been ugly even. She may have been beautiful, but just not his type. but just not his type. And that's my point, Mfundisi, is that we cannot say Joseph is an example of a person who resisted, because we don't know. For example, another example, Mfundisi, that I like to make in this very same Joseph situation, I'm not much of a booze person. I'm not attracted to alcohol, so there's no way you can tempt me by putting alcohol before me. I'm not a druggie, so there's no way you can tempt me with drugs. I'm not a tobacco person, so there's no way you can tempt me with tobacco. So there are things, even though they're tempting to other people, that you could never tempt me with, right?
Correct. So what I'm suggesting,
Mfundisi, is to say that Joseph is a typical example of a person who resisted. It's when somebody puts alcohol before me, I'm not resisting alcohol. I'm just not interested. It's not attractive to me. With somebody else, you put alcohol before somebody else, it would take the heaven and the earth for them to resist that alcohol, for them, that's their weakness. So I'm talking about people who have a weakness, Mfundisi. It may very well be that Joseph had no weakness for that kind of a woman, for that kind of beauty even.
So what I'm asking is
there somebody who literally resisted, and this was really tempting? It was, and he had to resist him from this. Do we have an example of that kind of a person?
You know, I don't know how this is going to sound. It might even sound like I'm blowing a horn, but I'd want to give myself as an example. Right? Okay. And I think this question rises up in the absence of discipleship, because when you have somebody discipling you, they've opened their life up to you for you to be able to see how are they resisting. I mean, I've walked away from contracts that were offering a lot of money because it didn't sound right to me. Not that that was the devil, but the best example is the one I gave you yesterday.
Right.
Listen, this woman, even up to date, she's a wonderful woman. She was one of the best on campus.
Right.
I wanted that experience.
Right.
But God would not let me have it.
Yeah.
That's an example of how I resisted. Days after, I wondered, what were you thinking, Andrew? That was a golden opportunity.
Right.
But I was able to resist. It was a weakness for me, I would tell you that.
Yeah.
I wanted that experience.
Okay. All right.
I was able to resist not because of myself.
Right.
Sincerely. But because the master, there had to have been a power greater than myself.
Yeah.
Pulling me away from that experience.
Okay. All right. So let's get into today's focus on Mfundisi, living a life of holiness and integrity. These lofty terms. What does it mean to you to live a holy and righteous life, Mfundisi?
In fact, they're very simple terms. You know, one of my weaknesses is that I'm a disciple maker.
Okay.
So I struggle with being technical. Like, I try to simplify everything because if I'm going to teach somebody something, then it has to be simple.
Right.
Right. And that's why I use a lot of analogies and examples, because that's what I live for. I live for making Christianity simple for the next person. So righteousness is basically right living. And I mean, you and I have probably had this conversation before. I'm like, I don't know Naye so much, and yet I respect Naye. Not because of anything that I've heard about Naye being Naye, but because it's coming out of my right living. I must respect every person.
Okay.
I serve in a recovery facility where people come recovering from substance abuse and gambling and all these other things.
Right.
And it's such a vulnerable space for them to be in. But if you came and asked them, I call them sir.
Right.
Not because of anything, but it's coming out of me. It's just my right living. It's what God has taught me. I must respect everyone.
Right.
That's what righteousness is.
Mm.
It's the life that starts coming out of you. Remember, Jesus has used this example before. He's telling the woman at the well that she will have a spring of water coming out of her. When God starts to do stuff inside of you, like, your entire life starts changing from the inside out.
Mm.
That's what having integrity and living holy and righteous is all about. It's as simple as just right living.
And this is according to whose standards, Mfundisi? Which standards are we talking about here?
This is God's standard, and I think this is a great question you've asked because it comes back to Derek's question from yesterday.
Okay.
the revealed word that we have in our hands. Isaiah 8:20 says to the law and to the testimony, if they don't speak according to this word, there's no light in them.
Right.
So we have this revealed word written down that we can compare our life to and say, this is the standard. But God isn't limited to revealing himself only that way, if I can put it that way. I don't know if I'm confusing anyone. So the standard is this revealed word.
Right.
The standard is Christ, because now he's brought us the very image of the Father and his activity. But John is not shy to mention that so much more did Jesus do that was not recorded, because if it was recorded, there would be no room on earth to walk, because it would be filled with records of what Jesus did.
Let me give you another example, Mfundis, of these standards that seem to be shifting goals for us as men of faith. And women of faith, for that matter. We are told, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the standard, and this is a very important standard that has been offered to us. And yet, when we look at it in the Bible, oh Lord, starting from our very own Messiah, Joseph was unequally yoked. And I'm talking about human standards. Joseph married a woman that already had a child.
Yeah.
A woman that had premarital pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Today, in your church, Mfundis, would you be able to encourage a young man to marry a woman who already has a child before marriage? This is something that you discourage. But but Jesus is a child born in a family where the mother came to a marriage, got married after she was with child. Now, I'll give you another example. We have this family of Abraham. Abraham himself comes from an idolatrous family, right? Let's assume Abraham converted and became a Yahwist. He then, we are told, he encourages his servant to go and find a wife for his son back from
people,
from those idolaters.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, let's find God-fearing people. No. He says, go back to those idolaters. Find a wife for my son there. And that's where Rebecca comes from. Rebecca comes from a family of idolaters. And then the same thing happens with Jacob, who's the son of Isaac. Isaac goes back. He's told by his mother to go back to Laban. And when he finds Laban there, he marries two of Laban's daughters who are idolaters. And these women who are two idolaters, one of them, the loved one, Rachel, steals a god. Doesn't leave her idolatrous life back in her marriage, in her family. She comes into this marriage with an idol. So we have no evidence of either Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah ever converting to God. So when you read the scripture, all of our patriarchs were unequally yoked in their marriages. Why are we told not to be unequally yoked if all of our patriarchs were unequally yoked?
That's a very, very good question. Allow me to answer it this way. When we are, I'm giving this as a preamble, when we're discussing like spiritual warfare, for example, it's important to note that we're not talking about two equal powers warring against each other.
Right.
So the devil is not God's equal.
Right.
Right. The devil is God's opposite.
Yeah.
I just wanted to put that in there so that anyone who's listening knows that God is all powerful and he doesn't have an equal.
Right.
When we come to being equally yoked, and in the examples you've given, it's important to note that the Bible is a story of how God saves us. It's a story. It's a collection of accounts of experiences and relationships, highlighting to us how God saves us. In it, he's got some instructions, and in it, he's got narrations of stories all of which are instructive, to be honest, because now we know this is how God has dealt with people.
Right.
So because Solomon has 1,000 women in his life,
right,
does not then instruct me to go and get 1,000 women in my life.
Right.
But I can read the story and see where God says his women took his heart away from God.
Right, right.
So when you are reading, for example, in the stories you've given, when the servant goes back to the people, he adds on top of that an extra layer in his choosing. He says, whoever is going to come and do A, B, C, D.
Right, right.
That begins to show to you, this is a heart being impacted on by God. And so this is a heart I can work with.
Even though it's an idolater. Through and through.
Even though it's an idolater, God is able to reach this heart.
Okay, so we can marry idolaters because we know God can reach them.
Now listen to this. It has to come with God's direction. Because I just can't wake up because I like how this woman looks like, and then I go marry her.
Right.
It might be detrimental to me because I've taken myself there.
Well, that's what Jacob did, Mfundis. Jacob just saw Rachel, kissed her without her permission, cried with so much emotion. There was no God involved with Jacob and Rachel. No God whatsoever. It was just him and his feelings.
But then you must also consider that, you know, when Peter is saying all scripture is given by the inspiration of God.
Right.
You must read it. You must read that story through that lens.
Okay.
Of this story God has chosen for me to read. And this was recorded for me to read what's in it for me. Like what's in there for me to learn.
Right.
So whatever made him choose, we can then come and follow his story.
Yeah.
And see how it turned out to be. I have the privilege of counseling people that are getting into marriage and some that are in marriage. And I can tell you the heartache that people experience when they are not equally yoked. I'm not talking equally yoked like, oh, going to the same church, because there are people that are in the same church.
Right. Yes.
But there's a place you've got to be in your relationship with God for you to be equally yoked with another person.
Right.
So for me, when I'm reading those stories, that's where I come.
Okay.
I'm looking for what's this individual's experience with God.
Yeah.
There's something that Pastor Henry Wright says. He says your choice of a partner is directly proportional or shows your level of spirituality at the time of your choice. You know, because if you're deeply spiritual and you're choosing somebody who's not deeply spiritual, where are you relating? How are you relating?
That standard is a very tricky one. Perhaps for another day we could talk about that, Mfundisi. It's very tricky, that standard. let's move on, Mfundisi. Let's move to this question. There's an assumption that then, therefore, because you've got God, you've got integrity. Right? Even though we know that is not true, Jacob was walking with God, but he had no integrity. He was a manipulative, deceitful liar. But there is an assumption. Let's move from that assumption, Mfundisi. How can personal integrity and ethical behavior serve as a defense against the devil's schemes?
All right. So Christianity is a practice. Like Christianity is not clothes you change in. It's a practice.
Right.
It's like going to the gym. I start with a certain weight. At some point that weight becomes a little easier, then I can increase.
Right.
I say that habits condition the heart. So when you're practicing integrity in your dealings over and over, it begins to condition your heart.
Right.
Such that you don't need somebody to remind you to be an upright man.
Okay.
At some point your heart has been conditioned. That's what the law was really. The law was written so that when you continue to practice the law, it conditions your heart such that at some point you don't need to read it. It's now conditioned your heart. Your heart has now become the law.
Right.
So integrity and all these practices are over and over condition your heart such that it becomes easier to say no to God. Like you were saying, there are certain temptations that don't affect you anymore.
at all?
At some point, I used to smoke quite a bit in my life.
Oh, okay.
But now you can never tempt me with cigarettes.
Yeah, sure.
Like you can, at some point, I would tell my friends, listen, if you love me, buy me cologne that smells like Peter Stuyvesant.
Okay.
And for me, that was the best smell in the world.
Is there such a cologne for this?
I hope there isn't. I don't know how
I'll
react. But yeah, you know, so Christianity is a practice. And so the more you practice, the more some of these things become
right.
easier for you to do.
So, let's talk about obedience. In what ways does obedience to God's command help you resist temptation, or does it ever?
It does. Again, it's just tying into the same, because it's, obedience is a practice.
Yeah.
And so two things I'll give you. First Thessalonians, I believe, First Thessalonians 4 verse 3. The very first part says, for this is God's will for you, your sanctification. Then the last part says that you may flee or resist sexual immorality. In fact, I think it says flee sexual immorality. Mm. God's will for you is your sanctification.
Right.
Your entire salvation experience is in three parts. Mm. Now, you've got your justification. The very first day, well, it's a little unfortunate for those that are born in, you know, in Christian homes. You were born in the Seventh-day Adventist home. But for those that come to the experience later,
right,
from the day you believe in Jesus,
yeah,
when you can remember, for those that come to the experience, it's very notable because, like, there's a very particular shift. Okay. For those that are born and raised in a Christian home, it's a weird blurred line. You're like, I don't know exactly when. I've always known about God. But the day one comes to believe in Jesus, they are justified,
right,
presented right before the Father.
Yeah.
What now happens after that justification to the day that Jesus comes is sanctification, which is a process of being made clean, or being made whole, being made pure, being made perfect.
Right.
Then when Jesus comes, we are glorified.
Okay.
So obedience is what you are practicing in the process of sanctification.
Yeah.
Which is easier on certain terms and harder on certain terms. You are a thinker. So you think through a lot of your decisions. Mm. You want to jump at just obeying certain things. You'd be like, no, but I must reason with you. God, like, what do you mean here? Mm. And God is big enough to invite you and say, come now, let us reason together now.
Right, right.
And then you bring your questions and you're like, no, but I struggle with this, God.
Right.
And then he's like, yeah, okay, so here's the response, because look at A, B, C, D. And then at some point you come and realize, hey, this makes sense.
Right, right.
So in the process of obeying God, a lot of these temptations from the enemy become easier to resist.
Right.
They might have been hard to resist earlier, but as you obey God, remember the text that says, he who is faithful in little will be faithful in much.
Right.
So if you're faithful in very little things, if in small things you're obeying God and you're doing that consistently, you begin to develop a muscle to resist and obey God in bigger things.
Okay. All right. All right, and for this, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for coming through and talking to us. We continue our conversation tomorrow on the very same idea of resisting the devil. Oh, I hope, I really hope when my day comes, I'll be able to resist. Have a wonderful day, further, when he's in Godspeed. Thank you so much, Nai. All right, when we come back and have a conversation now about, remember, it's a Wednesday, so it's Chew on That. AWR.
I already picked out to say that the church has been given gifts, and
you're never going to find in any of the fivefold ministries where there is a counselor or a marriage counselor, Lemwe.
You would want to. I don't want you to restrict your thinking, and I don't want you to narrow your definition because of maybe a narrative that we are trying to address here.
I'm just talking about the actual reading of Ephesians chapter 4. You're never going to find counselor or marriage counselor there.
This and more, only on Sinai, on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.